everybody. Welcome back. I have a special guest today. We are here with stuntman, director, VTuber, many, many talents, Lloyd Pitts, aka Lloyd's Fault.
Hi, guys.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to talk to you about all of the stuff that you have going on because we were just talking before the camera started.
It's hard not to. Right?
I know.
You walk in and you're like, it's catch-up time.
Yeah.
Go sit in the chair in front of the mic first.
wait. We need that for the podcast. Hold on. Run it back. Yeah. You have so much going on and it's so cool.
Yeah. We stay busy.
Yeah. And I want to start with being a stuntman, I want to know how you got into it. I want to know where that started for you and like how long you were doing it for, accomplishments, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to condense it because like any story, it's long, you know.
You don't have to condense it. Don't worry. That's
the editor will do that for us.
Yeah.
You know, it really did fall into one of those places where I didn't realize that I was always like preparing myself to be one without realizing it. Mm-hmm. I grew up in two of the most important things you can to be a stunt person. Mm-hmm. Martial arts my entire life, and theater. I was doing both. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stunt work isn't just the big impact and action. It's acting as the bad guys, the monsters, or doubling like your actor. Mm-hmm. So the theater background came into play every single job, you know? So my entire life bouncing between martial arts, martial art dojos and gyms, and then doing theater, I thought that I wanted to be an actor. I was like, that's my path. Mm-hmm. That's my Everest. And I was living in the down south, the deep south. I was in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I don't have the money to move to LA. That's where Hollywood is. Mm-hmm. I can't make it out there. I can't pursue that dream.
Right.
And I'll never forget, you know, picture perfect, clear as day. I went into a restaurant and I was working like 3 day jobs at a time. I was working at like a machine shop. I was working at a Starbucks and I forget, I was doing like this part-time door-to-door AT&T internet sale job.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like just trying to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And I went into a restaurant and a whole table had these shirts on that said, we survived Green Lantern.
Okay.
And it was the old Green Lantern.
The movie?
Ryan Reynolds movie, the Ryan Reynolds one. Which,
That's so funny.
Which at that time it had just been announced. There wasn't even a trailer. So we were like, this is going to be the best superhero film ever.
We weren't ready.
Yeah. We were unprepared. But back then we were excited.
Yeah.
And I see this whole team of people that said, we survived Green Lantern stunt team.
Mm.
So I went, why are they in my city?
Mm-hmm.
Like why it's a massive table, but I could see that at the very end of the table, there was this older guy that everyone kept going to and saying hi and goodbye to. And I was like, that's the leader, you know, like in a, that's the gym leader in
Pokemon.
That's
the guy. Yeah.
So I waited for the entire table to leave. Uh-huh. He and his wife were the last ones there and they got up off the table and they went sit at the bar to have a drink together.
Mm-hmm.
I approached him. Really, like, I was like, hi, sir. I'm sorry to bother you. I hope I'm not. I was just wondering, are you guys working on this film here in town? And he goes, oh, yeah, we just wrapped the movie. And he started telling me all kinds of stuff. He's like, we had some fun fights and we were throwing guys all over the place and stuff. He's like, oh, are you a comic book fan? And I went, I am, but I've always wanted to work in film.
Mm-hmm.
And he started dropping some names of like locals and stuff. And I went online that night and I was absolutely mind blown because I had no clue that they had started doing TV shows and films like in my backyard.
Wow.
And it had been going on for a while. So I got on an extras casting site and just started submitting my name to anything and everything just to get onto a set.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's how I discovered that it was like in my backyard.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just randomly at a restaurant.
And at the time too, I was miserable. You know how it is like when you're like just trying to find like, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
What am I good at? I like too many things to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely at that stage and kind of pulling my hair out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked in and I saw that and I felt like my vision just went and narrowed,
mm-hmm.
and everything else fell off.
Yeah. I always feel like whenever I feel like I'm about to quit, if I don't, something crazy happens. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like right then when something decides to like have some sort of divine intervention.
And yep.
Yeah. So that's really, really cool.
Life has a way of finding the weird timings.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So I assume you got on a couple of sets.
I did. So I started doing extra work, mm-hmm. Which is very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can put your name on a ton of these casting sites and just put up pictures of yourself and you'll eventually get a call.
Mm-hmm.
But what worked out for me is that I only did it to get on a set. Like, I was mm-hmm. like, I want to see, I've never been on one. Let me see what it looks like.
I just want to be where the people are.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, if I get to like sit in casting and watch an actor walk by, mm-hmm. I'm going to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that, putting my name everywhere. But what I realized very quickly is I got onto the set of Never Back Down 2.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Never Back Down movies?
Yeah.
I got on that set and they had like 200 extras as a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the extras would sit in holding, play on their phones, read a book. They'd go to set, cheer, do whatever they were told, and then they would leave. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I started bringing notebooks.
Mm.
Because I didn't know squat.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard like a camera guy say something to the DP or something, I started taking notes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I didn't know what DP meant. I didn't know what a first AD was. I didn't mm-hmm. know, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell. Like, the first day, someone's like, hey, can you go tell the PA that we need something? And I was like, what is a PA?
Yeah. Totally. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they're looking at me like, what are you doing here?
That's crazy.
So I started taking notes. And then I started to reach a point where I didn't really have anything else to write about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had kind of like learned as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you know, something showed you the way. I got a call one day on a job that I was done with. And they were like, hey, do you want to be such and such actor's stand-in?
Mm.
And I was like, I've never done that. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And all it was a, have you seen photography stand-ins?
I think so. Like,
yeah. So there's a big misconception with stunt people and stunt doubles and stand-ins.
Okay.
There are two different things. I can't tell you how many times someone's like, you were such an, you know, this person's stunt or stand-in. And I'm mm-hmm. like, no, I was a stunt double.
Right.
All the stand-in does is they're usually around the same height, same hair color, kind of same build.
Mm-hmm.
And your camera guys and your directors will use that person to line up shots with.
Mm.
And then replace them with the actor.
Gotcha.
To like save time.
Gotcha.
So totally. I became a few actors stand-in,
mm-hmm.
which put me talking directly to the directors, directly to the other actors,
mm-hmm.
directly to the director of principal photography. Mm-hmm. I kind of got like put in like a spotlight to just converse with these people more.
Mm-hmm.
And then the notes started changing.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, I don't have anything else to learn from this position.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of like taboo. I'm sure you've seen this with the cosplay world where if you're in one spot, they only view you as that job.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. as long as I continue to do stand-in work,
mm-hmm.
it didn't matter if I said, I want to be an actor or a stunt guy.
Mm-hmm.
They only look at you like that.
I've had this conversation with many people many times about cosplay and doing other things as well.
I bet.
Yeah.
So you get put in that box. Mm-hmm. You get put in that corner.
Totally.
And a lot of people have this kind of like fairy tale dream. Like, maybe if I'm a stand-in long enough, they'll give me a part.
Right.
It doesn't really happen. That's not the norm.
Yeah. You can just be the stand-in guy.
Yeah.
Like the go-to stand-in, but that's
they're
kind
like,
of
that's
like
my favorite stand-in.
Top of the ladder, right? Yeah.
So I eventually had to stop taking those jobs, which was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more I did that, the more I peeled away from the day jobs
mm-hmm.
and I needed the money.
Right.
So I had to quit doing stand-in work and extra work completely
mm-hmm.
to be taken seriously elsewhere.
Yeah, because I'm sure that if you started to say to everybody, no, I'm looking to do this instead, I'm not taking those jobs anymore, they know your work ethic already and they know you and they met you, so they are familiar with you and there's rapport there, and then they're like, well, we don't want to lose him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 That's really smart.
They don't want to lose you, but you're also super replaceable.
Absolutely.
So after I say no 2 to 3 times, they mm-hmm. stop asking. And mm-hmm. then I'm just kind of out there drifting, hoping to get the job that I actually want.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But that is, it's very ballsy. It's really scary, but it's really smart. It's like the way to fast track it, I would say.
Yeah.
Because I think that ensures that you will be taken seriously for another job versus just hoping and saying it enough times that one day someone might put you up for something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I see a lot of people, they try to balance both and then they use it kind of on their resume, but that's not what people are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
When I did finally get my first acting and stunt job, it wasn't because I was a stand-in for this other guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that never got put on the resume. That was just kind of like, I treated my time as an extra and a stand-in as my college. I always tell people.
Okay.
That was my time. I was getting paid to learn a set.
Mm-hmm.
And then I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just out there, you know? Yeah.
So how did you transition then from saying no more stand-in to something else?
I went back to a few more day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started shopping around agents and such, which they don't really take you if you're non-union.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the funny part about this is, and I'm realizing this as I'm telling you, I think like 2 years in to doing all this stuff, someone said, hey, there's some extra work on this really big film and they're paying, I forget what it was. It was like double the normal price and they're paying travel and they're doing these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, I don't really want to do extra work anymore, but it was like a really good paycheck and it was a month of work.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I can work 4 weeks making X amount a day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll do this one just to make some money. Mm-hmm. But my entire goal was to hide my face. I went onto the set and I'm like, I need to make money, but like, don't let anyone important know that I'm here. So like, I didn't want the stunt coordinator seeing I was an extra, you know what I mean? Like the important people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the set I ended up getting tafted into the union on.
Really?
Yeah. So it was a mix of extras and actual military people.
Mm-hmm.
And the director, Peter Berg, had a soft spot for military people. Like, he's a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
And he started more or less hooking people up. Like, if you were a military person and they knew military lingo, he would give them a line in the film, which meant they got tafted and they got a bigger paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Right? Can you explain what tafted is in case people don't know?
Yes. So tafted basically means if you're not union already, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get into the union, some of which is with like these vouchers that extras get. But tafted is a special occasion. It's a special instance where, let's say, a director is like, this is my person. You know, I want you to be this actress. There's nobody else. And they kind of go through this back door, this it's called a Taft-Hartley, to make you union, to be able to use you.
Right.
But then from there on, you're union forever. Like, you don't have to do it again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a lot of people's biggest dream is just to get into the Screen Actors Guild.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I didn't give up on the idea of becoming SAG, but I wasn't worried about it or stressing about it.
Okay.
To me, I was like, it was going to happen when it was going to happen, when the opportunity was right.
Right.
And I love telling this story because it's the worst example for anyone to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like when people go, how did you do it? I want to get in. I'm like, don't do what I did. Don't do this at all.
Uh-huh.
Peter Berg was taking care of these military people.
Mm-hmm.
I was not military, so I stayed back.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I was in a lot of scenes with them, though, watching the interactions. Well, there was a day where we were sitting at lunch and I sat down at a table with nobody else, right? And you don't go sit with the director. You don't go sit with like higher ups.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? You kind of give them their space.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit at a table alone and Peter Berg, the director, sits next to me. And I was like, whoa. I remember like texting a friend being like, the director just sat next to me. Should I run away? That would be awkward, right? This is weird. Like, no, that would be weird if I just like grabbed the tray and walked.
Right, right.
His scripty, the person who keeps track of like continuity in the script, sits across from him.
This is like sitting in the green room at conventions for me, yeah, where I'm like, where do I sit? I don't want to be like, what's up, William Shatner? And just like sit next to him. Yeah. You know, yeah, what I mean?
But if he said, if Shatner sits next to you,
yeah,
I was here first, man.
Yeah. Hello, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And then you get like that, what do they call it? Not the out of body thing, but like the complex,
I know what you mean, where you're like,
yeah,
you
don't feel
very
special
aware.
Enough.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here.
Presence. Oh, imposter syndrome.
Yeah. You're like, I don't even go here.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter sits next to me, his scripty sits across from him, mm-hmm, and I'm just eating my food. And they're arguing over a line of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And of course I'm like listening in.
Yeah.
Well, there was basically, as they shot this film, I think they had written military lingo, but after working with military people, they realized that some of it could be like course corrected a bit.
Okay.
And I remember Peter telling the guy, no one talks like that. Like, that's not the way someone would say this. I know, mm-hmm, it's scripted, but like we need to make it like more organic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of like laughed at something he said, like to myself. I was like eating and I was like, like that's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter goes, you see this guy? He doesn't think it's funny either. And I was like, oh shit, don't drag me into your thing. I was like, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter, he was like, what's your name? And I was like, Lloyd. And he was like, what's your last name? And I said, Pitts. He goes, Pitts, how would you say it? And I'm being dead honest. All this theater, and I had done improv and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I start like digging like deep. Like I'm like, I'm on the spot. I'm like sweating. I'm like, what would I do with this? What would I do with this? And I don't even remember what I said. Like it was a blur. Like I think I blacked out for like 30 seconds.
Totally know what you mean.
So I spit this line out and Peter smacks my arm and he goes, you hear that? Like that's how people talk. And he was like, thank you. And they went back to conversing and I was like, oh, that was a fun moment.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we finish our lunch. We end our day. The next morning, we got there at like 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I get in, I get my coffee, I'm walking to set and I'm walking opposite of Peter again. And I was like, oh, there's Pete, you know, there's the director.
Yeah.
And he goes, good morning, Pitts. And I was like, oh, morning, sir. And I was like, he remembered my name.
Wow.
So like already I'm having the time of my life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm getting paid a little extra.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not at Starbucks.
You were like, no one can see my face. And then the guy saw your face.
So he tells me good morning. I was like, that's awesome. And he goes, oh, hey, wait. And I turn around and he points to the corner of the stage that we're on. And he's like, there's a cart back there. Talk to this guy. Tell him to mic you up. And I have no idea what that even means.
Oh, my God.
So I went, yes, sir. As if I did. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Googles, what does mic up mean?
Yeah. I go to the back of the stage and it was the sound guy.
Mm.
And I was like, hi, sir. My name's Lloyd. Peter Berg just told me to come get mic'd up. And the guy was like, really?
Oh, no.
Like the director told an extra to get mic'd up. And I went, dude, he just walked by me and
this
told
is
me.
Everyone's dream.
I was like, I don't know what to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
He gets on the mic and he's like, yeah, I start hearing him talk to somebody like, I have this guy here, but. Okay. All right. Fine. Okay. Fine. They start miking me up and I'm like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So they, a PA comes to get me. And do you know what sides are?
Yeah.
Like the sides, for anyone who doesn't know, are like a smaller cut version of the script. They're usually like literally tiny. And this PA comes and finds me and is like, hey, are you Pitts? And I said, I am today. And they're like, here you go. And they shove some in my hands. And they start walking me to set. I'm not even looking at them because I'm just like, I'm holding what I'm told to hold. I'm mic'd up. What is going on?
Yeah, I'd be losing my mind.
So they come to set. We get to the set. And set that day was the bridge of a ship. Mm-hmm. And it was on a gimbal. So if this is the gimbal, this is the bridge. When they yelled action, it could move as if a boat was moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there are stairs to it. And at the bottom of the stairs is Peter. And he goes, all right, Pitts, you ready? And I said, ready for whatever, man. Let's do it. He walks me up to the bridge. We go through the set and we get to a corner and there's three cameras pointed at the corner of a room. And he goes, okay, so here's what's happening. And he starts pointing to this green screen and there's X's on the green screen. There's tape marks. And he goes, that's an alien ship. That's an alien ship. And we might do one over here. He goes, look through the lines. You don't have to memorize them. You're going to hear me on that microphone. I'm going to be yelling at you. You good? And I went, I'm fucking acting in this movie.
That's nuts.
I'm acting in this movie. And I went, yes, sir, let's go. So I get in the corner and there's three cameras and I felt my anxiety start to rise. Yeah. And I went, there's no cameras. I just went, nope. And I just like bottled it. No, there's no cameras. Fuck that.
Yeah.
And I look at the sides.
Not today.
Not today. I looked at the sides and it was a soldier number 10 and it was something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh my God, this. And it was all just panic lines. And I was like, oh, I've got that all day. That's in spades. He yells action. I start going through it. I'm gripping the side of the ship. I'm in a military uniform. And then he'd come across, all right, look at marker number A and say, what the fuck is that? And I'd go, what the fuck is that? And I just started taking his direction. Mm-hmm. And this happened for 3 minutes straight. Mm-hmm. They rolled for 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Killed an entire reel of footage. And then he yells, cut! He comes up, he shakes my hand, and he goes, you're going to do great in the industry. Good job today. I really appreciate you. And I was like, thank you for everything. Thank you. This was so much fun. This was amazing. He starts immediately going into another scene. Mm-hmm. So he's like, great, this is done. And he's gone. I'm like, buzzing.
Oh my God.
I walk down the stairs of the ship and mm-hmm. there's a person there and they're like, hi, are you Pitts? And I went, I sure am. They're like, we have your SAG paperwork ready. Can you come over here and fill it out? I was like, no one's going to believe this.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That was how I got into the Screen Actors Guild.
It sounds like a Wattpad fan fiction. That's what it sounds like.
Even to this day, like I said, I get excited to tell people because I'm like, you're not going to believe this.
No, that's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy work.
And then I do the paperwork and everything. And I'm like, this is insane. I go back to holding mm-hmm. and everyone else is like, how the fuck did you get on set? And I was just like,
oh, yeah, I bet everyone was staring at you. Yeah.
Because we had like 100 extras on that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, guys, I don't know the cheat code. You know what I mean? This just, the stars aligned. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
The very next morning, I get to set and again, a production assistant comes up, a different person, and they go, hey, are you Pitts? And I said, yes, I am. They showed me these sides. They had renamed the soldier number to Pitts. And they said, this is you now. You play after lunch. And I ended-
Shut the fuck up.
I went from going from an extra to an unnamed actor.
Wow.
From unnamed actor to a named actor. They used my real last name and I had 4 scenes in the film later.
Oh my God. So you're in, did you get cut?
No, 2 out of the 4 made it. I'm in Battleship.
Shut up. We based have to the, pull this movie. Yeah. We have to pull these scenes from this movie. That's two crazy.
Of my, and not only like 2 of my scenes, like 2 of my lines. Like I'm outside panicking at some point, and then I'm on the other side of the ship, yelling to the guys steering or something like that. But yeah, 2 out of the 4. Yeah,
that's crazy.
That's how I got in Screen Actors Guild.
Wow.
The funny
that's
part of
so cool. The funny what part a good about story.
It. The funny part about it is that I got tafted as an actor, mm-hmm. but then I kind of went, sweet, now I can do stunts. Because I wanted to do stunt work.
Okay. That was a question I was going to follow up with eventually. So you started out wanting to be an actor.
Yep.
Got a golden ticket, basically.
Discovered stunt work.
Oh, okay.
And then went, oh, I can do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then went, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a weird hot potato with my emotions.
Yeah. So then with the SAG eligibility in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
Why did you want to do stunts over acting then? What was that choice like?
I just really respected stuntmen. I was the kind of kid, I grew up watching Jackie Chan. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching the behind the scenes videos of other films, watching stuntmen do things. Mm-hmm. I was definitely that actually kid that mm-hmm. was like, did you know Stallone fell through glass? And I was like, that was a stunt double. I was that guy. Uh-huh. And honestly, I felt like it was at the time for me more stable. Mm-hmm. You know, actors mm-hmm. are lucky to get one day a year on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas stunt people, we can get a few weeks on a job at a time. You can double someone for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was still like young and in shape. And I was like, let's make money and get on more sets.
Yeah.
I also had like a bucket list of stunts that I wanted to do mm-hmm. from watching films, like watching a cowboy getting thrown through like a tavern window. Mm-hmm. Always wanted to do it, got to do it.
Nice.
Watching someone run across a scene on fire, got to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a bucket list.
Wow. Yeah. And have you checked all of the things off now?
Everything but one.
Okay.
And what happened with that last one is I saw multiple people get hurt doing it.
Mm.
And I kind of removed it off my list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only thing I never got to do, I got to do fire burns, high falls, wires, fights, you name it. Mm-hmm. Stuff that I didn't even know was stunts before. Mm-hmm. I got hit by a car. I never got to do a vehicle transfer.
Is that the one?
That's the one okay. where I saw people get hurt on and I went, you know, I can let that go.
Yeah.
It's
not that deep.
I'm good. It's not that deep. Yeah. It's not that deep.
Right.
A vehicle transfer is simply, or just a transfer is when like two moving things mm-hmm. meet up
mm-hmm.
and you go from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I could be on one car that's about to go off the cliff and I jump to the hood of a safe one.
Right.
That's a transfer.
Okay.
And I saw too many people get injured and I went, no, I'm okay.
Wow.
And they got injured in situations where everything should have went right.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that it was unsafe. It's mm-hmm. just a very risky thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everything, all of the safety steps were put in place and they still ended up getting hurt afterward?
Correct.
I see.
There's just sometimes, you know, a stunt person's job is to foresee what can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're literally looking into the future.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a scene where you're running through the woods and you're like, that's really safe. And a stunt person goes, she's wearing heels.
Mm.
We need to put her in flats so mm-hmm. she doesn't break an ankle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that people aren't looking at for safety.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it really far out and plan ahead and make everything as safe as possible. But sometimes things, they go wrong. Sometimes a piece of equipment can break and that leads to an injury.
Mm-hmm.
And no one could have called that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a crazy introduction to stunt work that you just gave me. I was locked in that entire time.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, congratulations. That is the coolest thing I've ever heard. Is there a stunt that you were really scared to do but had to do it anyway?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. That's a stunt that I was scared to do, but had to do it anyway. I mean, I think to a degree, most of them scare you to some level.
Mm-hmm.
They really do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not scared of it, I think you're not aware of everything and that's not a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do.
I think there's a healthy amount of fear
mm-hmm.
to have with these things.
You have to be a little bit afraid to be aware of all of the things that could go wrong, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a great question. I'm going through my Rolodex in my mind thinking, mm-hmm. let me think for a second.
I asked this question to Julia.
Yeah.
I know you guys do a lot of content together.
Yeah.
Fellow
stunt person.
Yeah, fellow stunt person.
I'm going to pull up my own IMDb while
yeah,
you say this.
Please.
So I can remember the jobs.
And Julia mentioned that the high fall, I believe, the really, really tall building that she jumped off of was something probably the most frightening thing that she had to do.
Yeah, she's went higher than I have. She pushed 50 to 55 feet on hers.
Mm-hmm.
Mine, I kept off at 35
mm-hmm.
because that's what the job called for.
Mm-hmm.
I got called for one that was worse than that, and I turned it down because I didn't have enough experience.
Mm.
I do wish there's a world where I could have done it.
Mm.
I look back at that one and every time and I go, oh, I wish I could have. I got called for, I think it was 100 feet.
Oh my gosh.
And it was over a rail. Something was exploding and the character was going over a rail, specifically 100 feet to water.
Mm.
And I had never done that far of a drop to water before.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the coordinator that. He called me for it and was like, you'd make a great double for the actor. Are you up for it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, I'm not scared of it, but I haven't done it.
Yeah.
So if you have someone on your list that has these already, go for them first.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he was like, hey, I appreciate the honesty. I'll call you for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I imagine being upfront and honest is better, because I started voice acting last year. Mm-hmm. And I get told by many, many coaches the same thing, that if I do something that I'm not super comfortable with, like in an audition, for example, and then get a callback or get booked for that gig, and then I go like to the studio or to the live directing session and can't keep it up,
right,
they will, like, it's a lot worse than not getting it in the first place, because now you're blacklisted in a way. Those directors or anybody who worked on that knows your name as somebody who can't deliver.
People talk.
And will never book you for anything again if they see your name come through.
Or they're just not going to trust it. They're not going to trust it anymore. It's a big issue we have in the industry, because people are, they're clawing at the bit for every job they can. Mm-hmm. It's a constant thing. I feel like I have to tell newer stunt people to not fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. It's like the worst. Don't do that. Don't fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. Because sure, you might get away with one or two where you figure it out, mm-hmm. but the one that you don't is going to bite you in the ass forever, mm-hmm. you know? So I've been very upfront with people in my skill set, what I can and can't do. It has cost me jobs, but it costed me jobs I should have never been doing to begin with.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, I was in a hair trailer. We were getting these wigs put on for a period piece, and a stunt coordinator who I love and adore, Buddy Joe, came in. And he started going down the line of chairs of stunt people. And he's like, hey, can you ride a horse? And the guy started to kind of fudge an answer. He's like, well, you know, I used to ride with my sister. And, you know, I still kind of remember to do it. It wasn't a yes. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay. And he went to the next guy and he went to the next guy and stuff like that. And I forget how I said it, but he went, hey, can you ride a horse? And I said, no, but I could get knocked off of one real fast. And he laughed at it and was like, okay. He hired somebody different to ride the horse into a scene. He comes up to me like a week later, or it might've been 2 weeks later. He goes, hey, you remember that time you said you could fall off a horse? And I went, yeah, that's funny, right? He goes, good, you do it Wednesday. And I was like, what the hell?
Oh my God.
And we had a scene where I just had an actor rode into the scene, mm-hmm. and then got swapped out with him. And then someone just tackled me off the horse.
Nice.
Just be honest. You still might get the job.
Right.
Just be honest.
It's better. It's much better. Yeah. And I imagine it makes everyone's jobs easier too, because now they're not having to weed through people who might give half truths and are trying to like make themselves sound better than they are.
For sure. And it's a very tough guy, industry. Mm-hmm. So everyone's trying to climb that king of the hill mountain, you know, oh yeah, I can fight. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can do this. Yeah, I can do that.
Right.
It's okay if you're not good at everything.
Right.
It's all right.
Right. You mentioned that you did different styles of fighting before you did stunt work. What fighting styles have you done?
Okay. So I grew up in Taekwondo. Mm-hmm. And I black belted in Taekwondo when I was really young. And this is something I also enjoy talking to people about. I black belted way younger than I should have ever done it. Because I was like a 15-year-old black belt that was just like, I thought I was about to be king of the world. Like, I have a black belt this young.
All
like,
this power.
All this power. I was like, I felt like I could take adults. I was like, yeah. It's so stupid.
With
so
great power comes great responsibility. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I realized I hadn't had my ass kicked enough yet, you know? And then I got into a Bagua Kung Fu school that just wiped the floor with me, mm-hmm. and I went, oh, this is a different beast, you know? Mm-hmm. I stayed with that association for many, 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 many years. We eventually got into kickboxing and San Shao fighting and stuff like that, and had like professional matches with that. And then from there, as stunts and film took over more of my life, and that schedule started to kind of like disperse, and I was traveling a lot. Mm-hmm. I kind of like wherever I was, I'd find a place to train, but it didn't last long. So I had like 2 years in Tangsudo, but I didn't get to like black belt with them or like continue that. That's just where I was. Went to another place and they had like a really awesome, what was it called? Ninjutsu academy there of really terrifying skilled people. Got to spend like a year with them. And it kind of became just like this ongoing training thing. which happens to a lot of stunt people. Mm. Whatever city they're in, whatever job they're on, let me train there for a month and then move, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you dabbled in many.
Very many.
Is
very many.
Taekwondo what you would consider like your top
no.
skill?
No, Kung Fu for sure.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, kind of. But when I got into Bagua Kung Fu, I think that really overwrote everything I had done in Taekwondo. Gotcha. I still had like Taekwondo kicks and flexibility, which was really handy. Mm-hmm. But Bagua became my new base and still is to this very day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've done like very, very minimal amounts of Muay Thai.
Yeah, love Muay Thai.
And I can't get the kicks right because I played soccer for so long.
Oh,
and they're
martial
so
artists and soccer people.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my trainer, Gilly, he's always like, it's easier if you've done ballet.
Yep.
But soccer is just a totally, I've had to like untrain how to kick.
I can't kick a soccer ball.
A ball.
I can't kick a soccer ball
really?
To save my life. Not to save my life. No.
What would happen was we would train the kick for so long until I got it. And then when we would come back the next week, we would have to do it all over again because my muscle memory for like, I've played soccer for like 8 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, this is how I kick. And then I'd have to be like, stop.
I feel like everyone needs like, eventually you're going to find like your own cheat code mm-hmm. that like really like locks it in for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was like really young and my kicks were kind of slanted in like the wrong way. And then I remember watching like a fan edit of like a Street Fighter character. And I saw Guile turn his hip a certain way. And I went, that looks really good. I'm going to try to rotate my hip like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then replicating that in a gym
mm-hmm.
and someone being like, oh, you finally got your kicks right. And I was like, sure did.
Oh, my God. I love video games.
Yeah.
Great segue here. So did you ever do cosplay as well as VTubing?
No, I've cosplayed with friends here and there when mm-hmm. I could put together something simple.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized very quickly
mm-hmm.
is that like as I would go to conventions with cosplayers and creators, I really enjoy camera work.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy editing like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've seen me around where I'm like, can I film that for you? Can I, will you hand me your phone? And I can't do that if I'm in cosplay too.
Mm.
I remember going to New York Comic Con with a big group
mm-hmm.
and I was in cosplay with them. And my brain immediately went into like this very camera guy manager mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But people liked my cosplay and they're like, can I get a picture with you? And I was like, I'm busy shooting for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, crap, as long as I'm dressed, I'm never going to be able to focus and
on
do
the
that.
Thing I like. Mm-hmm.
I went back to the hotel. I walked back to the hotel, got changed, and met back up with the group and shot with them for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'm just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun, but I'd rather help carry that side of the table for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was your experience going to conventions like for the first time? Were you always super nerdy when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine.
I was watching anime at a time that I should have been watching kids' cartoons.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I never watched Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. I never watched Blue's Clues. I never watched...
We're talking really young.
I'm talking about like I opened my eyes and I remember Dragon Ball.
Oh my God. Okay.
It's the honest truth. Mm-hmm. I was left alone a lot mm-hmm. as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really... Like my mom would put on the TV, see something animated and be like, cartoons,
mm-hmm.
and then leave.
Right.
And I was sitting there with Dragon Ball and Trigun and Cowboy Bebop.
Like explosions and fighting and death.
And some
amazing.
Of it back then was like still censored,
mm-hmm.
but like kids would come over to my house and they're like, you can't hang out with Lloyd anymore. He watches that Japanese stuff. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So when did you start going to conventions?
I am going to age myself a little bit. I remember when conventions were just really big meetups in hotel.
For very specific fandoms, right?
Yeah. They're like, we're having a Dragon Ball meetup in Baton Rouge. And that's all it was. And people had like paper Dragon Ball hair.
Uh-huh.
And we're selling like figures and stuff like that. Like that was just it.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, the first time I went to New York, it was either New York Comic Con or Anime NYC. I had a little culture shock Because I walked into the building and I was like, there's so many people here. And all the booths are so huge and there's lines for everything. And I was a little bitter. I was like, all of you young kids just get this?
Yeah.
I was like, you little bastards.
Mm-hmm. You don't know how good you have it.
I was bullied for this. Yeah. And now you get a whole con.
Right. Yeah. It's celebrated.
Yeah. It took me a moment to accept it and be like, it's fine.
Right. So then when you were, did that contribute to wanting to do like acting and movies and stunts and stuff? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Those types of films?
Absolutely. I think a lot of Japanese anime action, you know, I'm a big fan of. Like, I go back and I rewatch a lot of action scenes from old anime and watch, you know, like how that is used in new animation a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to bring that to live actions. And I get it in every once in a while, but you like can't tell the higher ups.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I want to pay homage to this really cool kick from Cowboy Bebop, but don't tell them it's from an anime.
Right.
I feel like people are still kind of weird about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They think it's either childish. Or like weird nerd stuff.
You wouldn't believe how many executive producers of multi-million-dollar films go, the children cartoon?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I want to show you Death Note. And
yeah.
I want to show you Erased.
Right.
It's not friendly.
Right. There's many different, just because it's animated doesn't make it for kids.
Yeah. I've seen animated films that have so much more heart and will bring out so many more tears than a live action.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. How did that transition to VTubing for you?
VTubing is a very selfish thing for me.
Uh-huh.
It's me going, I've always wanted to be an anime person,
mm-hmm.
and this is how I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Like, nobody else will ever give you permission to do the things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't sit around and you can't wait for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could walk down the street all day and be like, I want to be in an anime, and no one's going to care.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw VTubing as a way of, I have creative control over a character, where he lives, what he likes and dislikes, and I can create a whole lore around this. So it has been like one of the best creative outlets, and healthy too, because I don't have executive producers with say in it. I don't have a director coming over and being like, his hair should be purple.
Mm.
It's 100% mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I pay homage to a lot of my favorite animes through the design of my character.
Mm-hmm.
Stein from Soul Eater. Everyone's like, has anyone ever asked you? I was like, he was a reference, you know, uh-huh. with stitches and the lab coat. Vash the Stampede with like cyborg arm. Same with like Edward from like Full Metal Alchemist. There's a lot of like homage paid in
yeah
there.
yeah Your VTuber design is so cool.
Thank you.
Can you describe it? We'll put a little graphic on the screen, but can you like describe what it looks like?
So my VTuber is a mad scientist who was torn apart from this dark, mysterious entity.
Mm-hmm.
And in his quest for revenge against this thing,
mm-hmm.
he keeps fusing different monster DNA into his own to try to become stronger and faster and more powerful to rival the thing that changed his life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of elements and scars on the character mirror actual injuries that I've had as a stunt person.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they do. I flipped them. So like I had an injury that did a lot of major damage to my right collarbone and shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I gave Lloyd the mechanical left arm.
Mm-hmm.
I mirrored it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you mirror it for any particular reason?
I don't know. I thought there was like a really healthy way of like it, like looking in a mirror,
mm-hmm.
it being you, but having that split.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was perfectly a one-to-one of myself, it'd be a little weird. Mm-hmm. It'd be a little too self-indulgent.
Yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just
a way
flipped.
To pay homage, but not be too representative of you specifically. Yeah.
I also honestly knew it would lead to conversation. They're like, why did you pick this on him? And I'm like, because I broke my collarbone and this happened, and it would create conversation around it.
Right.
Yeah.
Why did you choose VTubing versus regular streaming then? Because you can be your own boss for both, right? Mm-hmm. But you went full VTuber, which is awesome. And I'm very excited for you.
Thank you.
But yeah.
Over IRL, it's a very simple answer. That VTuber is never going to age. You know, there's days that I wake up and I don't like my hair that day, or I have bags under my eyes because I've been editing for 2 weeks straight. Mm-hmm. And then you have to put that on camera. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That VTuber has a consistency to them that doesn't change unless I make it.
Right.
So I do have plans to slowly age him as I get older.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right now he's kind of a one-to-one to me, but he'll change.
Yeah.
But it's just a consistency. You know, mm-hmm. It's the same as, what's your favorite anime?
Full Metal Alchemist.
It is Full Metal.
Yeah.
You know that every time you go to rewatch that, mm-hmm. it's going to look the same and give you the same feelings and everything else.
Yeah.
Whereas with an IRL streamer, you might watch me one day and you're like, oh, he's really funny. And a month later, you're like, he's looking kind of ragged. Is he all right? uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. I stream on Twitch IRL a couple of days a week. And there are days where I'm like, oh, man, this is rough today.
It's a burden, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's also the matter of, you know, mine's data. It's data and JPEGs and PNGs. Mm-hmm. I can put that on a strong laptop and take it with me.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't uproot your streaming room with LEDs and lights to mm-hmm. your hotel and to a friend's house. Like,
right.
If I needed to, I can leave my home, go a few states away and still stream.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Does having the VTuber persona make streaming more difficult or less difficult, would you say? Or what are the pros and cons?
I mean, I think it's less difficult for the reasons that I had just said about the movement and everything, but you start to generate this lore, this consistent lore about the character, mm-hmm. right? Like, for instance, since I am a scientist, we call our chat lab rats.
Oh, cute.
Right? Mm-hmm. And these lab rats, I established very early on, your own lab rat can look any way you want it to. It can have different stitches. It can have a different color green or whatever else. So mm-hmm. everyone got to personalize theirs. Mm-hmm. And it really created a community within my channel. Mm-hmm. Like, if you went to a really popular IRL person who's playing a Apex, the stream's moving a mile a minute. Mm-hmm. There's nothing they all have in common other than they like that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in my community, not only does everyone have their own little corner of it, mm-hmm. but jokes that they make with me and with each other and I say to them become like lore. It becomes canon.
Right.
And it makes everybody tighter.
It almost feels like a DM on a D&D campaign. You're creating
absolutely.
A story. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's really fun getting to create stories and leak it to your community. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Create a comic mm-hmm. and be like, by the way, do you guys want to know how you're made? Mm-hmm. And they're like, please. Mm-hmm. And leak those little comics mm-hmm. and stuff like that and keep expanding on it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's very engaging.
Very
it's
much.
Very cool. It's you can be a part of things, like you said.
Yeah. I also think it lends to, on a business side of it, it lends to merch a whole lot stronger and mm-hmm. it's more fun.
Yeah. Totally.
Because if I want to create a whole line of clothing based on my lab rats, I know what they look like. I know what the colors are. I know what our catchphrases are to put on a sticker. Mm-hmm. Whereas IRL people, that's a real struggle. You're like, what, do I print my face on a sweater? What do you guys want?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Do you play games with the VTuber or do you mostly do just chatting?
Oh, no, both. Both. It's very easy. My VTuber has a toggle to actually hold a controller. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, when I'm moving, you'll see him move it around and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy. And a lot of VTubers game a ton, especially multiplayer gaming with VTuber collabs, mm-hmm. because you can have multiple models on screen at once.
Oh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then my fan base and their fan base starts coming up with lore for those VTubers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They remember everything.
Yeah, yeah,
everything.
Yeah. Did you watch a lot of VTubers before you created your own?
I did. That's actually kind of how I fell into it. So I'm a massive fan of Amelie. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with her work?
I have heard that name before.
Yeah, she's a singer. songwriter, and she covers a lot of anime openers and closers in English.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So she, I don't know if she knows this, we would play those in like stunt gyms to train to. Like all the time, because anime inspired us and hyped us up, right? Mm-hmm. So what was going on is I had been listening to her music for literal years. And then some friends of mine were getting into streaming, and they're like, I really want to stream, but I don't know what to do. And I was like, well, what do other people do? I don't know, because streaming was very new to me. And I was like, let me go look at people that I like and see what they do. And I remember clicking on her channel one day and seeing the Twitch link. And I'm like, oh, sweet. I can just see what she does, because she doesn't sing on stream, right? And I clicked on it, utter confusion. She's a VTuber. And I was like, what is this? But it was her voice, but it was animated. And I was like, I was mind blown. I was like, what? Okay, this is a different side of the internet that I didn't know existed. And then, you know how it is, you start to watch someone and Twitch is like, how about this person? How about that person?
Collabs and stuff.
And then I started discovering more and more. And then I was watching VTubers for like an entire year before it clicked.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you go through the process of designing your VTuber, is that something that you came up with, like drew out yourself?
I did.
Or like, did you feed all of it to an artist, like all your ideas?
It's definitely a collaboration for sure. I'm really proud of my design, because when I decided to make the jump, I had a few ideas, but the mad scientist kind of took over all of them very quickly. I was like, because I feel like that in real life. Like I can walk into a workshop and be like, what do y'all need? What are we doing? What are we shooting? I can tape this, hold that here. I got the light. You know what I mean? I'll make things work. So the mad scientist was an instant. And then I dug through the internet so hard. Every time I badly drew a detail of the VTuber, I went check to see if someone had it. Every single detail about my character. I was like, is there a VTuber that has a translucent jacket? Yes, there is. Okay, scrap that. I funneled it down to make sure that I was not copying anybody.
Gotcha.
In color scheme. You know, I found other people with stitches, and I was like, where are their stitches? Across their neck. And then I'd go back, and if I had one on my neck, I'd delete it. Yeah.
So that you were completely unique.
Yep.
Is there anything that you would do differently if you started now versus when you started before?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I came into the VTubing community really hard. Like when I debuted, I had like every asset for the channel you could possibly have ready. It was a very expensive endeavor, which I don't regret. But there are assets that I got so excited over, and I realized you don't need them that often, and I probably could have done without. I could have saved a little money here and there, but I don't really regret any of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It led you to where you are.
It does. I don't have many regrets at all. I do think I burn a couple bucks though.
The price of starting an entirely new industry. I mean, you have to here and there. Would you ever cosplay your VTuber?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I've thought about it from day one. I do know that the mechanical pieces would take someone else to 3D render for me, and it would be a print. Like, there's so many layers to my guy, not only with the arm and like moving components. I don't know if you've seen, but he has like a gear that spins. He has like an LED screen that turns around his arm. There's so many layers to it, but then also the stitching and the different skin color.
Right.
Which I hate body paint. Because as a stunt person, I got painted all the time. I had to be in like prosthetics all the time. I had to be in wigs all the time. And I'm kind of burnt out on it.
Right.
I know I'm going to do it eventually, but I think it would need to be for a big enough event that it felt worth going through all of that. You know what I mean? If I got to like host something big at TwitchCon, I'd be like, let's do the whole build.
Yeah. Right. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me and talking with me. I really appreciate it. Your stories are incredibly interesting.
I feel like I could have like rambled more on all of it. And I'm like, how many parts do you want to do?
Yeah. I mean, but it makes sense because everything is so, I don't know, engaging and interesting. Yeah. It's, you have a lot of fantastic stories and I appreciate you sharing them with everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. It's fun.
Are you looking forward to anything upcoming very soon? Is there anything that you're excited about or want to plug or share?
Let me think. Right now I'm trying to find a really strong balance between everything I'm still doing behind camera for film and TV. I'm doing a lot of directing and stuff, things of that nature, while still trying to get streaming time in and keep things interesting for like the community. We are almost to the goal of a plushie campaign.
Okay.
Where everyone's going to get plushies of like my mascot.
Awesome.
For the VTuber and stuff like that. And it's really a funny balance to like run over there and be like, all right, guys, did you get your pre-orders on for the plushie? And then I'm like, okay, so we're going to need cameras over here. It feels like dual identity right now.
Totally.
But honestly, I'm just happy to be busy. I'm happy to like stay in motion.
Yeah.
As tired as I am, I don't care.
Just I get
keep
that.
It going. Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather be busy than bored.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it feels good and exciting to look forward to things. At least that's how I feel about it. I feel the same way. I'd rather be busy than bored. And you're also directing a bunch of music videos or videos in general upcoming soon, you were saying.
I am. Yeah. It's funny. So in stunts, I do a lot of previs, stunt previs. Are you familiar with it?
No, I'm not.
So a stunt previs means you're going to give me a team. And if you say, hey, Lloyd, I want to fight in this warehouse and it's between A and B, I go without you, without the director, without the producers, and I go shoot it on my own. I design it. I figure out camera angles. I figure out lenses. I completely shoot it with my own stunt team, edit it, sound effects, everything. And I basically have like a test is what it is. It's a pre-visualization. That way, if you're the director, I can go to you and be like, this is what we have. What do you like? What do you not like? And we pre-build these action sequences long before we ever get to set where the money's getting burnt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've been doing that for so many years that when someone's like, we have a music video in my sleep, I'm like,
easy.
We can storyboard that out like while sitting at lunch.
Right.
You know what I mean? And a lot of people want action in their stuff. They're like, it'd be cool if we had a chase scene and stuff like that. So what ends up happening is they're like, Lloyd, can you come choreograph this chase scene? And I'm like, yes, here it is. Here's how you shoot it. And then they go, can you just do the whole video? And I'm like, hell yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
So I have 3 music videos potentially in the books very soon. Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
So many exciting different verticals you're a part of.
It has to be exciting. It has to. I would die at a day job.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Same.
If you put me on an assembly line and they're like, all you have to do is put the caps on the toothpaste, I'd be like, I'm going to go take a bath with a toaster. I'm good.
Yep. No, same. Yeah. Same. I also just can't sit still that long, even if I'm just sitting at a desk.
No. That's why I did stunts in the beginning too, is because I knew every day would be something completely different. You show up to set and they're like, you're going over a couch and through a breakaway table. Sick. Next week, never the same thing twice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, where can everyone find you on the internet?
I am Lloyd's Fault everywhere. L-L-O-Y-D. Just like the Lego movie. L-L-O-Y-D. Lloyd's Fault, like it's my fault, it's everywhere. Fault. No underscores, no numbers, no periods, no split it up. It's my fault.
We've got a brand identity here.
A strong one. A strong one.
You know, my name is one character away from being long enough for Twitter.
What do you mean?
I am my first and last name together is 16 characters, and a bunch of social medias, including Twitter, have a cap on 15. So,
and you know,
I'm not brand loyal everywhere.
And you know, statistically, the shorter the name is and the easier to spell, the more likely it is to like succeed. You're pushing the boundary.
I'm doing the worst. Doing the most and the worst. okay, so I have a very important question. to ask you.
Let's go.
Why don't you like cats?
Mother.